you know, if Johnson County does look at their own options over there, that would take an initial hit in our jail system as well. But we'd obviously have to seek other means to try to revamp those losses.
Okay, Kenny, I'll stay here with you on this one. Budgets will likely be tight in the upcoming fiscal years as the true impact of COVID-19 is determined. Law enforcement cuts are being proposed across the United States. Can the department run with fewer people while maintaining public safety?
Obviously, our biggest concern is public safety. You know, ideally, nobody wants to lay off anyone. It's a matter of trying to seek as many alternatives as we can. If we need to cut costs in other areas, whether that is looking at, you know, expenditures from gas utilization, how much we're spending in gas, as well as our training budget, instead of outsourcing that, going to other places, of trying to look at bringing that into our agency so we have less overhead. It's going to be a situation where we have to evaluate the totality of the circumstances. Ultimately, at the end of the day, the goal is to provide the highest quality safety and response to our citizens without jeopardizing jobs at the same time.
Okay. Captain Reese, Johnson County reevaluating its jail contract with new facilities maybe opening up in the region. Is Muscatine County prepared financially to house fewer contracted inmates?
Certainly. Yesterday, I believe we had 188 inmates in the facility. Of those, I want to say 3 to 5 were Johnson County. So right now, we're not housing a lot of Johnson County inmates. A vast majority of our population right now is federal inmates. And then local inmates, which I think we had 33, I believe. The housing and transportation that the county makes off of those housing issues or those housing inmates is substantial. I think 2019 was roughly $3.7 million for housing of out-of-county inmates. We are the 7th largest facility in the state, so we have the ability to house inmates from wherever. We've housed inmates from as far away as the Meskwaki Indians,
mm-hmm.
the tribe in Tama. We've housed for them Clinton County, Scott County, Cedar County, Johnson County, Lynn County. We house for a variety of different agencies. So I don't foresee that being a unsurmountable issue.
All right, and the follow-up question, budgets will likely be tight in the upcoming years as the true impact of COVID-19 is determined. Law enforcement cuts are being proposed across the United States. Can our department run with fewer people while maintaining the same public safety level?
I think the personnel is the last thing you want to cut. There are...
But could we be as safe if we had fewer people is, I guess, what I'm asking.
It would certainly be an issue. We've added manpower here recently within the last year. That's the first time we've done that in 15 years. We've gone through budget crises before. The fuel crunch that we had 15, 16, 17 years ago, we operated differently. We doubled up cars to save on fuel prices, to save on vehicle wear and tear, repair issues. We've made it through budget crunches before. While this one is certainly significant, we'll be okay.
Mike, if there are new facilities opening up in the region, the question to you, the first question here is, Muscatine County prepared financially to house fewer contracted inmates?
Well, I think first and foremost, if we get a lot of these cuts, we look at other counties and possibly lowering the cost for them to house inmates in our county, which is going to give them a little bit more incentive to house with us. Will we still make a profit? Absolutely. But will it be as substantial as it is now? No. So there's got to be some checks and balances. We got to make sure the revenue continues to come in, and that's by talking to other counties, maybe even further out than we are currently dealing with.
Okay, Mike, if there are cuts due to COVID-19, law enforcement cuts, as a matter of fact, are being proposed across the United States, can our department run with fewer people while maintaining public safety?
The public safety is paramount to what this job entails. Our job is to keep the public safe. We are currently running understaffed right now because of training. Do we need to get everybody full staffed? Yes, absolutely. But there are a multitude of different other avenues that we can look at cutting before personnel gets cut. First and foremost, we want to keep the public as safe as possible, and more bodies on the street, people in the cars, and more COs at the jail. That's a safety thing for not only the citizens, but us deputies and correctional officers.
All right, gentlemen, it is 10:32. We are going to take a short break here. We'll be back in a minute and a half, and we'll continue on with KWPC 2020 Sheriff's Candidates Forum. It's all brought to you by Muscatine County Farm Bureau. Please stay with us.
Farm Bureau is a nationwide organization that has local roots. The Muscatine County Farm Bureau is proud of its service to area communities. Every day, Farm Bureau members are working to make our community stronger. They lobby for lower taxes and better schools. They award scholarships to graduating high school seniors and work to improve rural health care by encouraging physicians to practice here at home. Farm Bureau members are your neighbors and friends. The Muscatine County Farm Bureau is a proud sponsor of the 2020 Muscatine County Sheriff's Forum. Listen live on KWPC AM 860 Friday, May 15th at 10 a.m. Remember to vote in the June 2nd primary for Muscatine County Sheriff.
And we're back again with the KWPC 2020 Sheriff's Candidates Forum. It's all brought to you by Muscatine County Farm Bureau. This time I'm going to start out with Captain Reese on this question, because maybe you have some more information than our other two candidates, since you're in an admin role. Jail Administrator Dean Naylor was placed on administrative leave after making alleged comments around 5 or more years ago. An internal review is underway, but Teamsters Local 239 have taken a vote of no confidence and called for his removal. How would you handle this situation, and are new department procedures necessary as a result of this controversy?
When that was brought to our attention, there was an internal investigation started. Those do take some time. Ultimately, that ended with his termination on May 1st.
Okay, I wasn't 100% sure if I was being factual on that. I didn't have that information. I apologize.
Yep. That happened on the 1st of May. This past Monday,
okay,
a new jail administrator was put into place, Captain Matt McCleary, who had served as the assistant jail administrator. So, again, I understand, well, that process does take some time from the investigation standpoint,
mm-hmm,
where once the investigation is initiated, there are some hoops that have to be jumped through with service to the person being investigated, placement on administrative leave, interviews, follow-up interviews, if there's any union issues with the employee, the employee has the right to have an attorney with them during those interviews. So trying to schedule those things can take some time. We can set a date. That date doesn't always work for the person that is the subject of.
Mm-hmm.
So that process does take a little time. Ultimately, everything culminated on the 1st, and then we transitioned to new jail administrator at the Board of Supervisors meeting this past Monday.
Okay, I guess the question is, how would you have handled this situation, and do you think new department procedures are necessary as a result of that controversy?
Our disciplinary process, my personal feeling can be tweaked a little bit, but with this situation, it worked. The complaint was made, the complaint was investigated, and discipline was handed down. Are there different theories on disciplinary actions? Absolutely. Punitive disciplinary versus non-punitive disciplinary.
But you guys always talk about the good old boy network, and I've worked for many bosses at a couple of different jobs where there's a good old boy network, but there's always some type of oversight in the companies that I've worked for. Is it different in the sheriff's office? What is the oversight if somebody, quote unquote, gets in trouble for something? What is the procedure, or is it different for whatever you're getting in trouble for?
So, if I'm understanding your question correctly, we have a progressive disciplinary system.
Like, let's say somebody in the sheriff's office says a cuss word. You can get written up for that, right?
Depending on where you're at, who you're in front of, who you're talking to.
But it can happen.
It can happen.
Okay. And the other incident that we could talk about here is the alleged racist comments that were made by Dean Naylor. That's another situation. What I'm getting at is, what is the process? Who is the oversight? Is it just the sheriff, or how does the process work? Does the sheriff have the ultimate say when somebody is written up for something?
So the way the process works is we have a captain that is in charge of our internal affairs process. So if a complaint is made against an employee, it will get to the captain that works the internal affairs.
Okay.
There are three of us that deal with internal affairs complaints that once they come in, there's a file made. That process then starts with initial investigation, service to whoever is the subject of that investigation. It's basically a piece of paper that says, hey, you're being investigated for this. This is a violation of policy section 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Mm-hmm. Are people quite frequently written up, per se?
No.
Do you see a lot of that?
Not typically.
So you don't see people that are getting written up for petty situations or the good old boy network, like all you guys are talking about?
I don't think so.
Okay.
There's more complaints that come in about our staff than the staff realizes. A lot of those complaints that come in, we look at them. If we find out that there's no policy violation, there's no rule violation, they did what they were supposed to do, and they handled themselves appropriately, that's marked unfounded, and we move on.
So is it the captains and the sheriff that do that?
So the patrol captain, myself, chief deputy, the sheriff, again, ultimately has the final blessing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's recommendations that might go on or go with once that investigation is complete.
But you three captains are quote-unquote internal affairs then, you would say.
Sure. Okay. There's another detective.
And I'm asking these questions because I don't know. So,
okay.
And I think, you know, the public would like to know that. So.
And there's a difference between what rises to internal affairs complaints or investigations and what complaints are handled by the line supervisors, the
okay.
sergeants. if somebody calls in and, hey, I saw this squad car going 85 miles an hour, and they shouldn't have been doing that. They didn't have their lights or siren on. Right. We get those kinds of right. complaints regularly.
Right.
A lot of times those issues are handled by the line supervisors, where they can go back, look at the video. Ultimately, they confer with the patrol captain, and there might be a written warning, a verbal warning, or just a pull off to the side and say, hey, don't be doing that anymore.
Sure.
So there's a lot of there's two different distinct disciplinary routes, the IA route and then what's coming from your general, what I would call run-of-the-mill complaints, if that makes sense.